All right. Hello, everybody. Hello. Welcome to the mentor-mentee conversation. How many mentors do we have in the room? How many mentees do we have? Oh, yes. What a good mix. I'm Laura Oakman. I'm going to be leading this conversation. I have been a sports broadcaster for over 25 years now. Normally, I say that at a women's conference, and I get a little nervous and go, who are my sports fans? But I'm in Boston, so who are my sports fans? I get so happy about that. If you would have told me 25 years ago or 15 years ago that I'd be leading a discussion about mentors, I would have gotten very confused. And I would have said, you must have the wrong girl, because I didn't have any. I didn't have a single one, and not because I didn't want one, but because I was so busy blazing my own trail and so busy creating my own path, I didn't have time to look around and look at anybody else next to me, in front of me, behind me. My sister's in the room who can relate to that. Of just, you're so focused on your own growth, especially as a woman in so many male-dominated industries that many of us are in. And I can tell you the exact moment that that path was set for me. I was a young reporter. I just got my first job in Montgomery, Alabama. It was a big deal for the Chicago girl to move that down south. I'm doing my first live shot on a Friday night for Friday Night Football, which is a big deal in the South. And I'm standing there taking in the moment. And it's a big moment. I've been told for years, can't do it, woman in sports. There's no other women in sports in Alabama. You don't know anything. And here you are waiting for your first coach to come on and do a live shot. And I made it. I mean, I'm making $10,500. Like, I've made it. And I'm sitting there enjoying that moment and soaking it in when I see the coach walking towards me. And he's holding a football and he's holding a basketball. And I notice it, but I don't think anything of it, because all I'm thinking is, look at me, I'm in a moment here. I've started. My career is going. So as he walks up, I have a big 22-year-old smile on my face. And I put my hand out, and before I could say, hi, coach, he says, little girl, you know the difference between a football and a basketball, right? The basketball is round, and the football is oblong. And I went from being on top of the world to my world completely collapsing like this. It rocked me. And that moment defined me for the longest time, because what it did was get me immediately to go, I got to know everything. Before I even say anything, they have to know I know everything about what I'm talking about. I cannot ask for help, because that's going to appear weak. And that really set my path of who I was for a long time. So my head down, I stayed in my lane, and I built a career. About 20 years later, another coach started moving my circle by giving me another defining moment. It was an NFL coach, not yours, in the city. And what he said to me was, he had a young woman the week before me, and he said, can I talk to you? And he said, what do you think we think of your value when I'm down 2 touchdowns at halftime? I'm at the most stressful point in my life, and an adorable young girl comes up to me and says something, but I don't know what she's saying because I don't know what she's trying to say. And then I try to say something back to give her some help, and I know she doesn't know what I'm saying. Why is she here? If he would have said that to me 10 years before, I would have been real judgmental of those young women. And I knew it wasn't one woman. I knew it was women. But at this wonderful motherly age, I got real protective and said, what can I do to help? What can I do to help this young woman who I know her confidence isn't shot on game day? Her confidence is now shot. And I knew that because I was that girl. So I started a company. I started a company for young women in sports and wanted to give all these young women 2 things that I never had. I wanted to give them a mentor who had seen it all, and I wanted to give them a network of women who they could go through it all with. It started with me trying to grab 20 women, any women on the street. You want to be broadcasters? Let me get you in this room. To now creating a network of over 1,500 women who support each other like crazy. So that's my favorite thing about this evolution I've had, is I would have killed for both. And what I learned is mentoring gave me a purpose I never had. I always had a passion. I love what I do. I've done it a really long time. But this gave me a purpose. And when, bless you, and when you do it right, the power that comes with being a mentor and the power that comes with being mentored is life-changing. And that's why I was so honored, delighted, and privileged to be leading this conversation, because we get to talk with two people who are doing it right. We asked for a drum roll. We asked for, like, a great theme introduction. We're not getting it, you guys. So instead, I'm going to do an introduction. You'll find out I'm not very big into what you do. I'm very big into who you are. I'm very big into the who, not the do. So that's going to be a theme today. But I want to first introduce Anthony Osler. What he does is very impressive. He's a senior vice president in the Global Service Americas Division at State Street. That's his do. His who, oh, is so much more beautiful. He was shaped when he was adopted into a family that supported and encouraged him to pursue his dreams and taught him that legacy is so much more than money, titles, or materials. It's about helping those who need help. Two words he gave me that described himself: genuinely approachable. I love those two words. His partner who's coming up here, who is Anthony's mentee, is Stacy Dawson Bell. She has a similar heart. Her do is managing director. Her who makes me worship her. She has been a lawyer, a litigator, a federal prosecutor, and a firefighter, all the while helping disadvantaged individuals overcome challenges like abused women and homeless and impoverished and victims of sex trafficking. She has been mentored by a wonderful one, and she mentors. Her two words were energized leadership. But forget that, because her son told her to tell me she would like to be introduced as a pirate ninja. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Anthony and Stacy. Or we will just say pirate ninja for the rest of this conversation.
Let's be honest. Let's just cut that off right now.
That's a tough one. We're going to jump right in, and I'm going to start with you, Anthony. I quickly learned in our first conversation that we had, going back to the who, not the do, mentoring isn't what you do, it's who you are. Why is it so important to you?
That's a great question. There's a lot of different reasons why mentoring is important to me, but a core one is what I like to do is help people solve their problems. It's not about giving them the answer, but teaching them how to find the answer. And it's very energizing to have someone have a problem or a desire or wanting to advance their careers or whatever it is they're trying to address, and helping them figure that out and then nurturing them along the way as they go along that journey. And if they have setbacks or stuff, give them advice and direction on how to handle those things. But it's amazing, because when you're launching someone in and helping them move forward, it's a very, very rewarding experience, quite different from getting a paycheck or a bonus or, you know, those kind of things. And so it's something that I find is self-reinforcing. The more people I help, the better I feel about, you know, what I'm doing and the purpose I have and the intangibles that come with that.
I just heard a little bit about your evolution as a leader, as a mentor and a leader. You've been doing it for so long. That always seems to be one of the hardest things about mentoring in the beginning when you start. How do I not tell them what to do, and how do I back up and let them figure it out?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I think the one of the things that where I benefited in my own development was, you know, I mentored people in high school, and then I mentored people in undergrad, and then I mentored people between undergrad and MBA, and I mentored people coming out of MBA, and then started. So I'd been doing it over the years and learned and experienced different things. I'd get feedback. It'd be people that maybe been former employees, and I was still mentoring them, and say, "Hey, you helped me with this in the past." But one of the things that clicked for me was the MBA program I went to had it's similar to Harvard Law School. It's a Canadian school. I have a business school. They do case method with Socratic, so everyone's contributing, and the whole thought process behind that is developing a framework for problem solving. And so what I realized, it's important to help people develop a framework for problem solving their career and life, because it's not your career, it's all tied together. And instead of prescribing the answer, helping them think about what's important, what are the criteria. That then helps filter out the alternatives, because often people would say, I've got this opportunity, should I do it? I'm like, okay, well, that's step 10. We've got to get to steps 1, 2, and 3, and that'll then tell us if step 7 makes sense or not. And I've also learned that it's important to help encourage people. So one of the things that, you know, I've seen mentioned in a couple of sessions today is people go, well, there's a job description, and I'm not confident I can apply for it. You know, women often want to have 100% of the qualifications before they have the courage to do it. And I often want people to step forward and advance that. And I think one of the reasons women get held back by that is they think about experience. But why you're being hired is for two primary dimensions. It's sort of skills and values and experiences. And qualifications are much more experience-driven, but the reality is people want to work with people that have a combination of skills and have good values. And so if you have core values and good skills, and maybe not all the experiences, but you're willing to take the risks and advance and push yourself, you're going to create opportunities for yourself that are actually quite significant.
The pirate ninja. So
bring it.
Go to the first question of just the first layer. Why is it important to you?
I think it's invaluable to everyone, and that's why it becomes important to me. I think by definition, every person is the least qualified person to decide what they should do with their career, because they're always trying to do something you've never done before, and you don't know what you don't know. You need somebody who knows more, can give you a guiding hand. Similarly, you know who you know, and I say that to mean that by limiting yourself to your scope and span of influence that exists currently, you're limited in the reach you have and your ability to grow beyond. And by reaching out to a mentor who can help you to explore a broader network of individuals and a broader set of minds that you can tap into, I just think it's incredibly essential. I will admit that for me, part of it is my own experience. I'm incredibly grateful to mentors through the years who have helped me to get to where I am. I'm the daughter of a truck driver and a secretary. I'm way gone beyond potentially what, you know, my upbringing could have been if it were not for mentors who helped me to see things that were so completely normal to them that was unexplored territory to me. And so it's a lot of gratitude, and it's something that I want to give back to, and it's also something that I really do think is like air. It is absolute necessity to career, and if I can give any of that, I'm happy to do so.
So for all the mentees in this room who just grabbed that air...
I have three out there, by the way.
And all of them who said, I want some of that, that's what I'm looking for. But I've heard from so many young men and women who say, I want a mentor because I want to find somebody to advance me in my career. Mm. What's the question they should be asking when you start with, I want a mentor, what's the first thing that they, or I want to, I'm sorry, I want to find a mentor, what's the first thing they should ask?
I thought, for me, I'll take a first pass at it, and then Anthony will give a much more intelligent, well, reasoned answer. So I may as well jump in first so I don't have to follow
He's
that.
He's trained you well.
I got you covered, I'll stalk. For me, it is, what am I missing? Because like I said, you are limited in your scope and knowledge. One of the things I believe very strongly is that you need to have a diverse set of mentors. And many people heard this morning, it really is about having your own executive board. You need people of different perspectives. And if you're only seeking somebody who looks like you or has had the same background or same gender, whatever the perspective is, you're missing what you honestly don't know. So when seeking out a mentor is, what am I missing? What don't I know? What are the larger macro forces in economics that I'm not understanding in my day-to-day, linear, very tiny view of the world? And so it should be really that kind of, what is the bigger picture that I'm missing and a mentor can give me?
It's a good question. I think it's what's important for people to think about when looking for a mentor, and I would echo what Stacy says, but there's also an element of fit and approach. Like, you wouldn't want me as a mentor if you're not prepared, if you aren't willing to explore all avenues, if you aren't willing to be honest about what your fears are, and be holistic. If I think about the relationships I have, the people I mentor, it starts fairly micro and definite, lots of questions. Ask them lots of questions to try and figure out their background, their interests, their criteria, so I can develop my own framework of how they should be making decisions, and then check that with them and make sure that we have alignment on that. And then as the relationship grows, we evolve. But part of that is giving them homework. Like, I expect people that I'm mentoring to have an agenda available in advance.
But do you have to grade it?
But I often speak to our leadership development program about, you know, how to do career management. And one of the things I say to them is, if you want to interact with me, don't waste my time. Right? So some mentors may not see it's a waste of time if all they're doing is just talking the whole time. But I'm there to help. So set an agenda in advance. Let's work together. Let's hold you accountable to your plan. If the plan's not working, let's work together to reassess that plan. But it's work. And I also expect them to set up the next meeting. I'm not going to chase them. I may have to reset it. But, you know, if we're going to meet, whatever the pattern is, you set it up. You follow up. You give me the agenda in advance. It's work. But that may not be what most mentors would expect of their mentees. So you have to also, just because someone is in a senior role doesn't mean they're going to actually help you or help you evolve. Right? I don't know.
And I talk about this with players all the time, the veterans whose role is supposed to be raising a rookie and turns into, is it your job to seek out the rookie and make sure he's doing the right thing, or is it the rookie's job? So let's continue with that theme.
Right.
Because I think that's a question that we all have. For the young ones who are looking to mentor, I don't want to bother you guys. I don't want to be a pain. And yet, for so many mentors, it's shown me that you're putting in the work, that you're worth this time.
Right.
I have a strong feeling about that because it's something that is a very counterintuitive component of our psychology, which is there's research I was reading that's fascinating that says, you know, if I am, you know, in this case a mentor, but anyone, and you, Laura, come to me and give me something, Anthony comes over and asks me for something, which one do I ultimately feel more invested in? And the answer is Anthony. It's against our common sense. We think if I'm asking things of people, I will be a burden, or in some way I am. They're going to think less of me. It's the opposite. When you have invested in someone, you then own part of their outcome. And so asking can be, first of all, can be quite flattering if somebody thinks that I have anything worth talking about. So, you know, there is an element of you really are being deferential in that process. And then them letting them invest in you and letting them own part of the outcome is incredibly important. Like, and so it's counterintuitive because you feel a burden, but it's just the opposite. One more thing, and then I promise I'll be quiet.
Keep going.
It gets to the other part of it, which is that sometimes I think people see mentoring as entirely altruistic. I won't lie, I really do care about people. I'm so sorry, hit the mic. I do really care about people, and that's part of the reason I do it, but I get so much out of mentoring. I get, you know, a fresh perspective. I get sometimes a view of some macro forces that I don't see in my world. I see what's happening over in this part of the industry or this part of the bank. I, as a mentor, get a lot out of mentoring, and sometimes that's missed.
Mm. Okay, so she took it in three wonderful places.
Sorry.
No, that's what you're supposed to do, but I'm bringing you back to the responsibility part of who it is.
Yes, yeah, so I think, if you're then thinking about how to select a mentor, you have to think about what is their approach? What is their availability? What perspectives can they give you? Do you think you can trust them? Like, trust is important. Is it a genuine relationship? And can you trust that they'll keep your confidence? Like, if you want to talk compensation, I helped a woman that used to work for me get an extra $100,000 in compensation as she was being recruited to another company. So she had the confidence to share with me, this was my offer, what do you think? I'm like, well, it's inadequate. She said, well, how do I handle it? I don't want to hurt the relationship with the ask. Well, this is what you need to do. But you have to think about, would I be willing to, if that person was my mentor, would I be willing to share that kind of issue? Or, you know, she was thinking of having another child. Like, what, you know, all those sort of personal questions, because it's holistic. It's not just your career. Your goals and objectives should be, you know, family first, health, you know, and work obviously is important, but also what are you doing in the community? Like, we're all very fortunate. What are we doing to give back? Like, you have to be thinking holistically. It's not just work. You need to be, if you think you can picture a mentor that you could share all those different objectives or issues, not talking about, geez, my husband's a pain in the neck, because they're all a pain in the neck, but but the reality is it's about, you know, being able to have a holistic, trusting relationship that you can have someone to bounce stuff off that will be objective, won't be evaluating you for it, and helping you find solutions. And so I think that's an important criteria. It's obviously heavily intangible. It may not work with large companies. A lot of times people who are assigned, not chosen. You know, I've been fortunate people have been assigned and have chosen to be mentored by me or whatever. I find the ones that choose me, it's more rewarding generally. But the assigning ones are still really interesting because it's a good challenge because you still have to develop a relationship with someone that prior to being assigned, you didn't know.
It's funny because you mentioned a couple things. And at first when you talked about the negotiating and asking for money, and I thought, oh, I would have killed for a male mentor who would have helped me with that. And then when you said about having a baby, I was like, I need a, you know, that would be nice to have a woman mentor. So I love that this is a mixed room here because we've talked about this already of the dynamics of, especially at a women's, you know, a women's conference where the value of women empowering and mentoring women, which is essential, but the value of having men and women together. Biggest thing you have gotten out of Anthony that you wouldn't have gotten or didn't get out of your women mentors, and not to say which is better, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But how is it different?
He's Canadian. It's interesting. There's so much intangible in there. It's hard to unpack. So let me try to do it in a probably delicate way, in the sense of, you know, you heard me say before, diversity of viewpoint. I'm not putting any set definitions. So certainly, as I mentioned, that's part of it he's bringing to me. But, you know, it's hard for me to say that's because he's male. Or do I say that he, you know, I'm getting an SVP perspective or a financial industry perspective. And how much of that, if there has been any such thing of historic discrimination in the industry, I'm not saying there is or isn't, but if there has, me saying I have a male mentor, is that getting me more of exposure to over a period of time? So I would say that I've never seen it that way. I've never looked at it and said, you know, Anthony is a fantastic mentor, and because he's male, I get these three things. It is that overall, I have found a person who has incredibly sophisticated thinking about a lot of things, and he is so influential in my life, and that it comes from him as a person and all of his...
wallet.
Checks. I take checks. But no, the real point is that, you know, it's everything he brings to the table. I don't know that I can unpack gender. You know what I mean? This is somebody who has a real broad scope and span. Is his gender part of his identity that is a whole picture of the mentor that he is to me? Absolutely. But I don't know that I can cut that out as a part that I can ascribe. I'll say this. He's much better on the football than me. I would say that if I need to know how to talk shop, Anthony's got that covered.
And speaking of that, I saw your game plan you put together for everybody that you mentor. Mm-hmm. And I looked through it and thought that I really was looking at a game plan with all the graphs and with all the diagrams. And I was reading it and going, gosh, what wonderful things. But also thinking, is there a list for women that, you know, if I have a woman that I am leading, mm-hmm. I'm going to make sure that I hit these ingredients a little bit harder.
Yeah, there is. And probably number one, I kind of hinted at earlier in the intro, is really about overcoming fear and taking risk. And so a lot of time, I'll spend a lot of time kind of breaking down, thinking about the concept of skills and values versus experience. And so let's unpack that a bit. If we think about what we have a toolkit of skills and experiences. It's this big. And it'll help us do what we're doing currently, but it may not be enough for what we need in the future. And so if we have an objective, we have to figure out what it is, and we have to ascertain, based on what we currently know, what skills and experience one would need to be able to achieve that objective. And then you have to reverse engineer that path, and there's a couple of different ways to doing to achieving that. But then you have to assess, okay, what do I currently have? And a large amount of our skills and experience, I would describe, are innate, which I mean, maybe we went to business school or doing different things. We did volunteer work. But they're not displayed at work. And the reality is you're generally known as your most current role, unless you're very new in your current role. So people think of you, it's human behavior to visualize or think about you as most recently. If you're also new to your employer, you're also even more considered recently. Your experience pre-employer is not as relevant. But you would have experience from other jobs and other employers or whatever. It's essentially innate but not displayed at your employer. So part of what you're challenging me to do when thinking about your career is get opportunities to display skills and experience you already have. And then the other thing is to expand that box, both on the experience side and on the skill side. And so as you're trying to, you've got that reverse engineering plan, how do you then go and pursue against what you're trying to achieve, you need to be willing to take risks. But a good way to take a risk is to do it on strengths. So if you know, I can manage people. I run my church auction or whatever it is. But you haven't had a chance to do that because your employer, you're viewed by your employer as an individual contributor and you're running some sort of specific thing, but you're not running employees. You can say, hey, I'd like this management opportunity, and I actually have the skills to do that. I know I can do it. I just haven't had a chance to display it here. So it's a strength. It's there. And so don't be afraid to ask for it. Don't say, well, just because I haven't managed a team means I can't apply for that role. Anyway, so that's an area that I often spend a fair amount of time on, and I think it's really important to think about those things and have confidence that it's actually not as much as a risk as you think. And by doing from strength, you'll actually get to a more virtuous cycle.
What I love, say one thing about that, which is that, you know, I'm a direct beneficiary of that. And I say that because, you know, my past experience before in my current role or in the current firm I'm working with was very linear. You know, I was a firefighter, testified in a case, decided to be a prosecutor, went to law school, went to a firm to become a prosecutor, became a prosecutor. You know, and so it was a very linear path. And then when I completely pivoted my career and decided to come in to the financial industry and leave, not be a direct lawyer, I think that Anthony made me think in a whole different way, going back to you don't know what you don't know, having that kind of perspective of expanding the box and thinking about that in a very different way than I had done to the past. So I was just a direct beneficiary to that of redefining myself. So that's especially what he's sharing, I think, is especially important if you're pivoting your career or looking to really make a big change. This is the toolkit that lets you do it.
And what I love is that what you don't know what you don't know, but also when you mix it. When we mix gender, and when it's not, you know, two men or two women, the question to me would be, how many times do you hear yourself say to each other, huh, I never thought about it like that before?
I'll show you something else, though, and I am not on the payroll, I promise. I'm just incredibly indebted to Anthony. But, you know, he loves to portray he's such a toughie. I mean, he really does sell that, doesn't he? But the times that he's toughest on me is when I'm arguing for my limitations. When I'm like, oh, but I really can't get that job. You don't know you can't get that job. You know what I mean? Or, you know, I don't think that I have the qualifications. Why do you say that? I mean, so, you know, it's, you don't know what you don't know. Sometimes it's that challenge that you have that, you know, we're too easy to assume we cannot obtain what may very well be a possibility.
We're good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's just the Canadian joke, but Wayne Gretzky said you can't score if you don't shoot. And, you know, so I'm obviously encouraging people to think about that. But, you know, I think what's interesting, you know, I solicit some feedback from some people I mentored in advance of this, just think about some things to share. And so one of the things, one of the feedback points that I had was people will approach me and say, so we've got our criteria, now I've got an alternative that I want to evaluate. What do you think of this? And then I can help them walk how that may play out and what doors it may open and what doors it may close. And then they can make their own sort of net present value or distillation of that, bring it back to the decision or the opportunity here. And the reason I can do that is I've worked in five different pillars of the financial services industry in multiple different roles in multiple geographies. I've been Canadian, I moved down here, but I've also had roles that are global. I've been to Asia 20 times in my career. I've been to Europe 50, you know. So I have a lot of cultural and different industry perspectives. I've worked in corporate roles, I've worked in business roles, I've worked in marketing roles, all these different dimensions. And so what's interesting is I've essentially created a three-dimensional cube of understanding of the industry globally. It's a maybe an inch thick, but it's very broad and holistic. And so when people say, I'm thinking of pursuing this, well, I've had experience in that area or close enough to the area so I can triangulate what that means and help them play out the opportunity and what that may be helpful for. And so that's something that it's not necessarily, oh, when I did this, it's like, this is how I think this would play out. And this is what I think it would do for you. Is that what you want? And then they can make the decision. So I think that's something that my background can be helpful. But it's also helpful if you're a mentor. You may or may not have that breadth and depth of experience, but what experiences you do have and the logic you have, you can help your mentees play out opportunities and then let them make the decision against that.
One of the things I loved learning about your story is as much as we can mentor usually from our experiences, that's how we all most likely are going to, your wake-up call with a woman that you were mentoring over a decade before you came to State Street, was something to do with her experience that you learned.
Yeah, so it's a good point, Laurie. So thank you. There was a woman that I recruited at a company, worked at a couple of companies ago. I recruited her to be my replacement because I like to switch roles every few years. I get bored. And so one of my objectives was to get my successor in, got her made a VP. I then moved to a different area in the company. And she was off to a great start, but ultimately she ended up leaving the company. And even though I'd kept in touch with her, mentored, and tried to help her through the challenges, the reality was that she lost faith in the company because the manager that she worked for only advanced and promoted men and treated all the women like doormats. And so it was kind of eye-opening for me because up to that point in my career, I just, you know, I was used to working with women and men, and I just assumed everything was fine. But sort of realized, oh, geez, like, it's not an easy environment. Not everyone's like me. Not everyone's looking for the best talent. Not everyone's finds a successor or training people or helping people advance or helping with their... And so it made me realize, okay, well, I need to put extra effort into supporting those that don't have those paths or support. And it changed my effort or time in supporting and mentoring. I do mentor men, but it's a fraction of the people I mentor. I also view former employees as sort of my own alumni. So they have a blank check to email me anytime, and I'll give them a call within 24 hours. You know, so and that's, you know, so that's like, that's why that woman, when she was in the compensation, I was helping her with that, because that was one of my alumni, right? This other woman, you know, she was switching roles. I helped her go through the interview process, you know, references. I mean, I think it's important to do that because, unfortunately, there are people out there that still have significant prejudices in the financial services industry that make it very hard.
In many industries. And now I see why you two are such kindred spirits, because one of my favorite words that you've used to describe this relationship is fluid. Mm. That it seems like it evolves, it changes. And especially as you sitting here as a mentee and very much a mentor, too.
I do feel that, you know, for anybody to say that they are a mentee or a mentor kind of assumes that there's some magic snap the line point in time. And I think wherever you are in your career, I don't care, you have the ability to mentor and help someone. And either somebody who is, whether it be just much younger than you or making a move into your industry where they are not, you have something to offer. And looking for those opportunities, I think, is something somewhat incumbent on all of us who have had great mentors act for us. But I do like the fluidity concept in more ways than one. One way is that it's fluid in terms of mentor-mentee, but another is in terms of what I'm looking for from a mentor. Sometimes it can be, you know, the bigger, broader, how, you know, my next phase of my career, the long-term goal, you know, the big moments. And sometimes it's literally the interpersonal dynamics happening in a situation that you really want a different perspective on. And so it's just very, very fluid. And I do feel that it comes back to something that you get that support. And it's really support from somebody who's going to give you their view of it, but in a supportive way such that you really have the benefit of their distance from a situation, a relationship, or from the bigger, broader question of you and where you're going. So I like the fluidity of it.
We're going to have you all be able to ask questions. I'm just going to finish with one question each, but just so you know, as soon as we finish this, Please have your questions ready.
No questions on pirates or ninjas.
All questions on pirates or ninjas, please. I'm going to start with you because it's one thing to sit and talk about mentors and mentees and kind of abstract, and it sounds wonderful. It's a whole other thing when we get to sit and watch it at work and see what you mean to each other. So I'm going to ask the last one a little bit more heart than everything. How has he changed your life?
I met Anthony through a structured program from State Street. There's the Professional Women's Network. They set up the mentoring circles, and so I was one of several. And when the time came for it to be over, I politely informed him he wasn't getting rid of me without a restraining order. And it was such a tremendous change point in my career. When I started, it was my first role into the firm. I took kind of any entry point into the firm, and I changed over to where I am. In the time that I have met him, I have grown from kind of a lawyer trying to find themselves in a new career in a new firm to I feel like I'm back on a plan again in my career. I've taken a new role. I've gotten a promotion. Do I have to keep going? And, you know, and it's funny because I'll even say this just for a moment of the heart, since you asked for it. I've been just life is life, right? And I've just gone through a very hard year with my family. I had a lot of illness and a lot of stuff to dress up. And some of, we take walks. We try, instead of coffee or anything else, we try to go take a walk. We're not far, State Street from Boston Common. So I've walked Boston Common many, many, many times. And some of the walks, we're talking about my sister in the hospital, you know what I mean? And that's not, you know, that's not always what you seek for a mentor, but it's not like there's any lines or definition. And so when you go to change your life, it's somebody who I know who's rooting for me. So it's really empowered me.
Normally, then I would, we always ask the mentee about that, but in the spirit of being fluid, how has Stacy changed your life?
Well, it's heavily energized it.
We all see that.
You know, it's interesting. I've learned a lot from Stacy because it's a good example. You have to be very careful when you give her advice because she's like a dog with a bone. Right? So it's quite, you know, you get an immediate feedback loop if you give advice or, hey, I think this is the right way to go, you know, given the options she's presenting or the issues she's got. It's amazing how she can pursue it and the energy she puts into things. But also, it's also amazing just by just giving a little encouragement what you can unlock. And so I've learned a lot about how, you know, the role of mentor, it's really important. It's a big responsibility. You can't half-ass it when someone's going to take your advice and run with it and seek your input and trust you. They're trusting you with their career and their primary decisions. That's a big deal. There's a precious thing in there that you have to shepherd, and so it's quite an honor. But it's also enjoyable to be shepherding that and supporting that. So it's something that adds a lot to my life, and it's one of the reasons why I like being a mentor is that great feedback loop.
How many of you just want to be mentored by either one of them? We can turn it over to questions now. We have two microphones right over here. If you just start there, and we will try to get to every one of them. And you can start us off, sister.
I read an article this week that broke my heart a bit about how a reaction that some men on Wall Street are having to the Me Too movement. I'm sure a lot of people read that, cried a little bit on the inside or the outside. How some men on Wall Street are saying, I'm going to limit my risk by just not being in situations where, not being in one-on-one situations with women. That is really tough to be an effective mentor in that situation. I'd love to hear how you think about it, what you say to other men that might
right.
verbalize or not verbalize those fear, and then how you navigate it from a woman's perspective.
So a couple of things. I'm Canadian. And in all due respect to our vice president, but I think he damaged male-female relations significantly by saying he won't be with a woman other than his wife alone in a room.
I don't think he would follow that.
Yeah, no, I know. But I think he's made that a public statement and given people an excuse to close barriers or just say, I'm not going to do it. And or me too. And me as a Canadian, I just think it's unacceptable. I mean, you guys have a chance to vote. You can do what you want. But the reality is I think it is truly bizarre. I mean, he must have no self-control or they must have no self-control. There's women in this audience that I've mentored. Stacey's here. I don't think anyone's ever felt uncomfortable around me, right? They're human beings. We're in this. Oh, Jeremy feels uncomfortable.
Is that a conversation? Do you feel like you have to have that conversation before or in this climate now?
No, but I do have male colleagues that have said, I don't know what to do with me too. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, how would you talk to your daughter? Or, you know, just try and slow and take a step back and just go, hello. Like, these are human beings that want your advice and support or feedback or to be managed. Like, it's not rocket science. Just, you know, check your ego at the door and think, okay, This is about being normal. It's if you're being appropriate, it's not going to be a problem. I don't know. It's just, but it's a total cop out. Sorry, I hope that's direct enough.
Yeah, we'll take even more. Yeah.
I have a very strong reaction, and I'm glad you asked the question because this is such an incredible time. And when you look at this, you know, we look at where Laura was. She, you know, when what mentoring did she have? So you're saying, okay, we've progressed so far, and we took people, like, that wasn't even a concept of having cross-gender mentoring, to now you're going to have some small group who chickens out. You know what I mean? I'm not sure we lost much. You know, if those are selecting out, or those that they are think that there's a problem to be dealt with, I'm on the other side of the coin. We're in the Me Too land now, that I can ask somebody to be a mentor, and I don't need to worry that he's going to assume that that implies a certain relationship.
Oh, that's
awesome. So, I'm the other way. I feel very strongly about
empowered.
That. Oh, yeah. There's, like, I don't need to worry, because I don't need to worry that it's going to they're going to think that me coming to them and saying, I want your advice, means I'll sleep with you for a job. And so I understand the concern, and look, we're all in a day that the world's not black and white anymore, and things are a little more gray, so you need to be more thoughtful of others. I can live with that world if it means we're a little more balanced. So.
Yes. Thank you for the question.
Oh, sorry, over there.
Hi, my question's for Stacey.
Hi.
You mentioned that because of your background, you know, moving into a big corporate world, some things that were very familiar, kind of commonplace for some people weren't necessarily for you, and you had good mentorship around that. Could you talk a little bit about some of the advice that you received?
Sure. And I'll do it kind of before I made the jump and after I made the jump, and I promise it won't take too long. But when I decided I was going to make a career change, I knew enough to know that I really needed to get smarter. And my vision of the world, which was law enforcement and putting bad guys in jail at that time, needed to get much, much bigger. And I didn't know what I would say. I hoard myself around this city. I had lunches and breakfasts and dinners and drinks and, I mean, you name it, coffees. I had everything to talk to anyone who would talk to me. Not about a job, but it was like just trying to learn a new field and industry and what was out there. And part of it was me deciding what path I wanted to pursue, but part of it was to become much more educated. So then I started looking. I made a decision. I come to go, and here I am. You know, I've been a litigator for 12 years. You know, I'll put you in jail for 10 years, but don't ask me to write a project plan. Like, you know, and so I was really, you know, quite like, I'm going to prep. He's like, what am I going to tell these people? I can argue with you for hours on end. I mean, that's not really the first thing a child boss wants to hear. And when I came in, you know, I came in the first day. It doesn't matter what or where. I won't go into the details of it. But I realized that what I thought was completely inapplicable, meaning 12 years as a litigator, I had such an ability to transpose that I didn't really understand. And this is part of what mentoring gave to me. I could run a room. I meet a deadline. I call them trial dates. Just all you had to do was tell me a deadline is a trial date. I got it. We're good. I got a court date this day. It will happen. And so I ended up finding, and part of it was feedback, good feedback from bosses who also partially served as mentors. I'm sure you're going to be surprised that sometimes knowing when to pull back a little bit was some good guidance I needed to receive. And then other times to say, you know, you do not need to apologize for not being in this industry for the past 10 years or something to that effect. So it's a roundabout answer to your question of, you know, I really through that had an education process where I learned to appreciate soft skills much more and to know how to better feature those in the current environment, even though it didn't have the same bench, jury box, and the like. Is that the answer?
Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, Darcy Lake, MFS Investment Management. I wanted to say thank you so much for taking the time today. I found a lot of what you said applicable to my current mentor-mentee relationships, and I feel like it'll be helpful moving forward.
Wonderful.
And you made the point, Stacey, that it's important to have a group of diverse mentors. Mm. And Anthony made the point of it's important to take your time in choosing a mentor and really kind of the criteria you put into who's the right mentor for me. We hear a lot today of this, there's been a shift of you need a mentor to succeed in business. It's just kind of known now you need one to help you kind of navigate and to make the right decisions, kind of have that sound advice and create that relationship. And in that kind of culture, I always make the joke of, you have the children's book, Are You My Mother? And and so in this culture, it's, Are You My Mentor? And so being in a position of power, how do you navigate that? Do you get more people asking to be your mentee than you're able to take on? Or do you face that at all? And how do you get around it or approach it, I guess?
That's a very good question. So first off, MFS, owned by Sun Life, great company. Dean Connor, the CEO of Sun Life, great man. Anyway, it's a little fun for Canada.
Shout out.
So, really good question. I do get more requests for people to me to mentor them than I can handle. I guess the word's out. So the challenge, and I'm involved in mentoring someone in our PDP program, which is our entry level out of college, our LDP, which is at just before VP level. Obviously, I do our mentoring circles, and I mentor, obviously, former alumni, and then I mentor people on my team. So I probably have, at any given time, probably have 12 or so active mentoring relationships, which would be having at least a conversation.
You're cheating on me? Sorry.
12, and those would each probably have a conversation at least once a month. And then probably another 12 that it would be, like, quarterly. And then those alumni would be situationally, often those go episodic. I'm looking for a new role or something's going on, but it would be at least once or twice a year, those sort of alumni groups, all those women that I look after, you know, sort of through time. But and so adding someone incrementally onto that, I mean, as percentage-wise, is not a lot, but part of what I try and evaluate is, will they take the process seriously? Because it's the investment up front. Like, I spent a lot of time at the beginning of the relationship trying to understand the individual, their criteria and stuff, and flesh it out. But I find it very hard to say no. But if I'm going through that evaluation stage and it's not working out, I'm not going to say book another meeting or, you know, sometimes people just want to do a drive-by shooting and want to get my Cole's notes on how to think about life, and then they move on, which is entirely fine. But, you know, I'm pretty intense in those initial phases to test that out. So if they're not willing to be honest or share information, they sometimes self-select out.
I think we have time one or two more. Were you next? Okay.
Thank you. It's a short one. My name is Diane. Thank you so much for this panel. I'm speaking at a webinar in January because we're launching a mentor program for our little niche in commercial real estate. So selfishly, this is very timely for me, and I just wrote my presentation sitting there. But I have to sell it both to mentors and mentees, and my greatest mentor also happens to be named Anthony. And when I told him how excited I was about this program, he said, you're going to have a hard time getting the young people to sign up. Kids today don't want to do this kind of thing. You need a carrot. You need, like, some hook that's going to bring them in. So my question is, you know, for each of you, like, what's the one carrot that might appeal to somebody with 10 years or fewer years of experience in a particular niche that's going to really sell them on becoming a mentee?
You go first, or me, either one?
You go first.
Power of example. I mean, just really evangelizing. I mean, I'm very clear that everyone needs a mentor in one form or fashion. You can do bites where it's like, you know, you think about things that they may not know so much about, of, you know, introductions to more senior people, because, the, you know, being able to have that audience and, you know, getting them into the room with those folks is enticing to somebody who's just starting out in their career. But really being somebody, and this sounds... this is just bad advice. I don't know how to say it. What I'm giving you is bad advice, but, like, literally making it something that feels magnetic. And, you know, and I get it, my energy level, and I own that. But really, being somebody who they want to talk to. And some of that, and Anthony is probably much more thoughtful. Anthony is much more thoughtful about it than I am. And I definitely want to see people mentored, and it really is something that if somebody approaches me, I'll find out some way that either I'm going to mentor them or somebody who is better qualified is going to mentor them. But the overall point is making it that people, like, are drawn to it because they see the interest in them, the possibilities that it outlays, the... frankly, even if you're just very economic, you know, the ability to get promoted faster, to get into the big room quicker, you know. So I think that it sells itself because it's the reality of it, but it is really about those who are either offering to be mentors or setting up these programs to really just live that. Live that by the way that they talk to people. I've picked up more mentees from things like this, and it doesn't have to be speaking about, but anywhere I come and I'm really speaking with passion and energy and interest and enthusiasm, that's genuine. Trust me, I'm annoying to work with. I have references on that because it's like all this all the time. But when you bring the real interest and enthusiasm to what you're doing, people will be drawn to it. I don't buy the millennials don't want to be mentored. I don't buy that at all. I'm not seeing it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Not a lot to add to that, but the only other thing I would say is something we talked about earlier is... if you want to advance in your career and you're relatively earlier in your career, one benefit of a mentoring relationship is getting perspectives and knowledge of areas that you don't have exposure to, so that you can figure out paths or areas to potentially pursue. And so it's like if you're unsure, you want to stay in the industry, but you're unsure where you're going to be in 5 or 10 years. A mentor can help you better understand the alternatives and objectives to pursue.
Perfect. Thank you.
We have to wrap up, but we have one more. So we're going to make this one quick.
Rapid fire.
And I'm sorry if I go a minute over.
My question is about setting up a mentoring program for success. We've tended to pair people up, and I think that's fallen a bit flat, and there's been some confusion about how much work the mentee is supposed to be doing to kind of get things rolling. And I think people just don't know how to have a conversation with so few guidelines and being paired off in sort of an artificial way. So I was wondering if you could share some best practices.
Sure. Well, there's a couple of things. Morgan McDonald in the white sweater here helps with our program, our PWM program, on training the mentors and setting up how some of the stuff works. And do you do a training for mentees too, or to someone else in the PWM? Or anyway, so introduce yourself to Morgan.
Okay.
I think there's a couple of things, but I think it is important for the mentees or proteges, whatever you want to call them, for them to own the process.
Yep.
But it's also just as important for the mentors to be, you know, like they're there to facilitate, not necessarily pontificate. So it is important to make expectations for the mentors to be about facilitation, problem solving, but not pontificating, and that they should be evaluated. And if mentors aren't doing a good job, they should be not asked to continue as mentors, because there's no point in partnering people up and then having given them a bad experience and then letting them repeat that the following year, and then they get to check the box on their performance review, because that's not doing anyone a service. So, like, I think it's actually very important to set expectations. We want people in this program. But you're going to be evaluated. You know, like, it may sound weird, as oftentimes people are uncomfortable asking people that are volunteering to do something to set certain expectations. But they could be ruining people's lives with bad advice or wasting their time or setting up false expectations, which would be far more disappointing and disengaging than if they had no mentor in the first place. But anyway.
I'll take a little stoic step, and we got to go, so very quickly. I've seen some things. I think what you're talking about is that, you know, you want this to happen, but when you do the pairing, it comes across as artificial. So I think of it more like a petri dish, and I don't know any better analogy than that, but you create an environment for it to grow, but you got to let it grow on its own. And so I've seen some stuff, and probably Morgan's the one to thank for it, but things done lately at State Street that I thought were very, very effective. We did one, and it really played to my, you know, obvious ADD nature, which was mentoring speed dating. And so, like, literally, they set up 6 circles, and all the 6 people, all the mentees, 6 in each, stayed in their seats, and then every 10 minutes, you flip to the next one. And it just gave them an opportunity to meet a lot of different people and have those very quick conversations to get a sense of each other. From that, I've had 3 people reach out to me and ask to be, you know, to have more discussions. I've seen us do recently... the mentoring circles we mentioned about, where you don't have that one-on-one, which can be very intimidating or, you know, contrived. The mentoring circles, where it's one mentor with several, whether these conversations are happening. And I now have both been in one and run one at the same time, which is a different conversation. But the point is that, like, we meet once every other month, and I come with a set challenge questions. All right, guys, today we're talking about this. Today we're talking about that. And those have led to one-off conversations. And frankly, I shamelessly plagiarized his model. I did what he taught me, which is that between the bigger group meetings, you would at least have one one-off meeting so that they get the personal attention. And again, exploring whether there was a good one-on-one relationship to be had. So I think it is I highly recommend petri dish scenarios, that you're making sure ways that conversations are happening between senior and junior individuals, and then letting them grow from there on their own. Because as Anthony says, it's key that they have ownership and selection in the process. That's my view.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for wonderful questions. And thank you all for wonderful energy. That makes all the difference.
Absolutely.
When you're shooting it over here. And thank you to our pirate ninja, of course, Stacey Dawson-Valf, and our mentor extraordinaire, Anthony Osler. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
all.
Laura.
It's wonderful.